really want to reach out to more members of the minority and members of the majority in the Senate and try to find common ground.
Lawmakers reflect on breaking through the divide over the state budget. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, August 23rd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Akiak's Tribal Council banishes a former village police officer.
My issue has been the complete despotic attitude of most of the ruling family here, the fascist manner in which they run the town.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Wells Fargo, with over 13,000 ATMs and more than 6,000 branches coast to coast. For a branch location near you, visit wellsfargo.com.
And by
ExxonMobil Alaska, whose goal is safe and responsible operations of the Point Thompson facility. ExxonMobil, energy lives here.
A group of oil industry representatives, tax experts, lawmakers, and state employees met yesterday to start the process of decoding a controversial new oil and gas tax credit law. The Department of Revenue has begun its process of writing the regulations that interpret House Bill 111. And those interpretations could cost companies or the state millions. One big step in this process is figuring out how and when the state's cashable tax credit program will end. Lawmakers drew the line at July 1, 2017, and any work that happens after that date that is eligible for a state tax credit is supposed to be awarded under a new system. Ken Alper is the director of the state's tax division. He says it isn't as simple as switching over to a new system this year.
So for those credits that are tied to a specific set of expenses, like an exploration credit, that's easy to do. And we're able to say this invoice was from before July 1st and this one was after.
But some credits, like net operating loss credits, are typically calculated for the whole year.
It's very difficult to break that up and say what portion of the loss comes from what month.
Alper says this year companies will be allowed to calculate net operating loss tax credits for the entire year's work. Half of that credit will be eligible for cash, and the other half will fall under the new law. People who testified asked for clarification on other parts of the bill, including a ring fencing provision that changes how fields owned by the same company are separated for tax credits, and a section that allows companies to apply tax credits to what they owe from previous years. Most of the provisions of the new bill go into effect on January 1, 2018. John Larson, audit master for the state's tax division, says the department plans to have the regulations out by then. The tax division is taking comments until August 29th. There will be a set of draft regulations and another round of public comment in October. Southeast Alaska lawmakers spent time during the legislative session working to protect regional interests, including the ferry system. But the lack of agreement over a long-term plan to balance the state's budget means there's more work for them to do. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman talked with Juneau's two state representatives about the session.
Representative Sam Keto III and Justin Parrish both say the legislature accomplished some good this year. This includes preventing cuts to the public school and ferry budgets. But they say the legislature's inability to agree on a long-term plan to balance the state's budget was a major disappointment. Here's Keto.
What I do want to do is make sure that we don't spend down our savings to the point where we have to significantly increase taxes beyond what is proposed to the Alaskan public.
Keto is a Democrat who represents nearly half of Juneau, as well as Haines, Skagway, and Gustavus. Keto says the new law ending oil and gas tax credits that companies can cash in was a start.
I do have a concern that there's still a lot of work left to do in trying to make sure that we are providing for the best revenue stream from the oil and gas industry, at the same time providing adequate incentives for smaller corporations, smaller companies to go out and do exploration.
Keto chairs the Legislative Council, which can influence how much lawmakers are paid per day during sessions. He suggests that criticism of the legislature's per diem payments shouldn't be a major focus as lawmakers consider addressing the budget gap.
Even though it is an issue that some members of the public are highlighting, it is one of those things that is, for me, a distraction on trying to get our work done.
Kito would like to see the legislature meet to pass legislation increasing state revenue later this year, but he says that will only make sense if leaders in both the House and Senate will agree to work together.
Having productive leadership discussions early on and more often could have actually alleviated some of the delays that we saw in trying to get out of town this year. Hopefully, we learn our lesson from this year and we are able to get our work done in a more reasonable amount of time next year.
Parrish also is a Democrat. He represents the rest of Juneau, including the Mendenhall Valley. It was his first session. He's disappointed the Senate didn't spend more time considering the income tax proposal the House passed.
Most Alaskans recognize that we need to step up to the plate, we need to contribute, or we'll be leaving a much worse state for our children, and that's not okay with most of us.
Parrish parted ways with most of the other members of the House majority, including Kito, in supporting funds for the Juneau Access Project to extend the road north of Juneau.
Most importantly, I represent my district, and the people in my district have told me that it's a priority to them that in the long term, people in Juneau should have an easier way of getting out of town and getting back.
Parrish voted with most of the Republican House minority against the capital budget due to a cut to the road funding. He'd like to see House members work together more.
There is not enough bipartisan cooperation in the House. I'm glad that our current coalition with Republicans, Democrats, and Independents was able to come together, but I really want to reach out to more members of the minority and members of the majority in the Senate and try to find common ground, try to find realistic solutions to the serious problems that are facing us.
Speculation on the timing for a fourth special session focused on revenue has centered on late October, but that may depend on legislative leaders making progress before then. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
The Air Force is weighing a plan that could bring a lot more noise to at least one Anchorage neighborhood. At a meeting tonight, Air Force representatives are talking with community members at Clark Middle School in the Mountain View neighborhood, one of the most ethnically diverse and poorest parts of Anchorage. The forum is meant to hear concerns and reactions to a draft environmental impact statement on a proposed change to how F-22 fighter jets take off and land at nearby Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. Every year, the Air Force tries to conduct about 5,700 training flights with the jets out of J-Bear. They say in order to improve efficiency and safety, they need more flexibility in which runways they use. The plan they're recommending would increase activity on a north-south runway, which, as the EIS notes, would increase off-base noise and have disproportionate effects on minority and low-income populations in the community of Mountain View. Jason Bookman is president of Mountain View's Community Council, and his house is right under the flight path when jets turn to make a northward approach. He says a certain amount of noise from J-Bear is just part of living in the neighborhood, but the new flight pattern goes well beyond that.
When the planes are doing the north-south landings, it's much more like you're attending an air show, and it can be much more intense.
This summer, as work was done on the east-west runway used for F-22 takeoffs, residents got a taste of what more north-south usage means for noise. Bookman says the F-22s make an unpleasant whistling sound compared to the deeper rumble of larger cargo craft. He's sympathetic to safety concerns cited by the Air Force and its aim to keep air traffic with civilian planes less cluttered. But he says many residents in Mountain View feel like the neighborhood concerns get ignored. And as a result, officials with the city and military don't treat it with the same consideration as more well-to-do parts of Anchorage.
The impacts that we face by our location, by the fact that, you know, we are a mixed neighborhood, it just doesn't get the priority or seriousness that some of the other communities would generate in terms of concerns.
A spokesperson for the Air Force's 673rd Wing said no one was with detailed knowledge of the proposal would be available in time for this broadcast. The draft EIS includes multiple other options for the Air Force to handle F-22 traffic at J-Bear. Officials will be taking comments on those proposals as well. The meeting at Clark Middle School starts at 6 and lasts until 9 tonight. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a drug dealer agrees to a jail sentence but says he won't stay clean there.
I can go back to jail right now and get any drug I want in a second, and I can use it any way I want. I can shoot it. I can smoke it.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Opioids are common prescription pain relievers and must be used properly to avoid danger. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medication prevents children and pets from accidental poisoning and protects the environment. Information about safe opioid storage and proper disposal is at opioids.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
On August 10th, Akiak's tribal council banished a former village police officer from their community. The trouble is, he still hasn't left. Jacques Hooper, age 43, is accused of bootlegging and selling marijuana to both adults and minors in the village. Cooper denies all of the allegations and remains in town. The community's effort to drive him out has devolved into shouting matches and public threats of violence, some of which have been live streamed on Facebook. KYUK's Teresa Katsourilis reports.
Last Sunday, Akiak residents angrily confronted Jacques Cooper at his home and then live-streamed the confrontation on Facebook.
We are banished from Akiak. Action. And you can come back.
We can ban anyone for... The tribe can ban anyone.
For
what you're doing, illegal activity, drug dealing and bootlegging, Mr. Refill a Jug.
In the video, Cooper is standing on his faded yellow porch in his socks, slouched against a pillar. He's packing two large knives, holstered at either hip. About a half dozen local mothers and tribal leaders are standing in front of his house. The video is about 40 minutes long, and as it continues, it becomes clear that Cooper is recording the confrontation too. He mocks the crowd with a cartoony voice, they yell back at him, and then the allegations start. According to Tribal Council member Mike Williams, Akiak's council voted unanimously to banish Cooper. The order was issued on August 10th and gave Cooper 7 days to leave town, which he has yet to do. Cooper moved to Akiak last year when his wife was hired as a special education teacher at the local school. He worked briefly as a village police officer, or VPO, and began raising goats and chickens in his backyard. According to Akiak Native Community Chief Ivan M. Ivan, it became an open secret that Cooper was selling alcohol and marijuana in town.
This is a small village, and it's hard to hide whatever you're doing from the community members.
Residents allege that Cooper invited minors to work on the small farm he started behind his house, and then may have paid them in marijuana or alcohol. Both Ivan and Williams claim that a series of locals have made statements against him. In an interview with KYUK, a 15-year-old girl who asked to remain anonymous recounted an incident from last March. When she and a 13-year-old friend visited Cooper, they saw other underage people there smoking marijuana. The girl said that she and her friend left after Cooper tried to touch her. According to Councilmember Williams, Akiak community members have complained to the state troopers about Cooper. He says this isn't the first time that Akiak has banished someone for bootlegging.
We have enough problems here as it is, and having an individual like that in the community just adds fuel to the fire, and we just cannot afford that anymore.
There have been at least a dozen banishments in Alaska since 2015, many of which targeted accused bootleggers and drug dealers. And it can be a controversial practice. In an email exchange yesterday, Assistant Attorney General Corey Mills wrote that, quote, banishment orders can present difficult constitutional issues that have to be evaluated on a case-by-case basis.
From what I understand about the banishment order, they never had a meeting that I was notified about.
That's Jacques Cooper. He claims he didn't know about his own banishment order until it was issued, and that no evidence has been presented against him. And he denies all of the allegations. Cooper says that while he smokes marijuana for medicinal purposes on his own time, he doesn't sell it. And he claims he's been harassed in Akiak for months. The trouble started, Cooper said, when he was working as a VPO and attempted to arrest a man named Kenneth Phillip, the mayor's nephew.
My issue has been the complete despotic attitude of most of the ruling family here, the fascist manner in which they run the town.
Cooper claims that he is scheduled to testify against Phillip on September 18th. While KYUK has been unable to confirm this, Kenneth Phillip has been charged with 3 counts of assault, and his trial is scheduled to begin in Bethel on September 13th. Cooper also says that he's been threatened. He claims that someone shot one of his goats with a BB gun. Another person shot a dog, which Cooper says they thought belonged to him. And then there was last Saturday, when Cooper claims someone shot at the side of his house. ACIAC Chief Ivan M. Ivan denied that any shooting had occurred. According to Councilmember Williams, Cooper will be able to get a proper hearing on his banishment if he wants one. "We welcome it," said Williams. "We request it." But so far, Williams said, they haven't heard anything from him. And regardless of any controversy, Williams says, he defends their decision to banish Cooper.
"We do not appreciate anyone coming here and selling alcohol and drugs or anything like that to our community members. We just won't stand for that, and our ancestors didn't stand for that either."
Our investigation into this story is ongoing. For KYUK, I'm Teresa Katsourilis.
A 38-year-old Anchorage man pleaded guilty in a Dillingham heroin dealing case Tuesday. Joshua Garrett Rivera agreed to a 6-year jail sentence, but as KDLG's Dave Benninger reports, Rivera suggested that's not a place for an addict like himself to be.
Rivera was caught in January 2016. Dillingham police had gathered intel that he was in town and selling heroin out of the Wallona house on Nurka Loop. They sent a confidential informant in to make a buy, then obtained a warrant to enter and search the house. Police turned up 12.5 grams of black tar heroin, hidden where their informant said it would be, and a lot of cash, as Chief Dan Pasquarello explained at the time.
"We seized $18,981. It's actually over $19,000. We didn't count the change, which was in quarters, dimes, nickels, and probably came from some child's piggy bank."
Rivera was booked on 2 felony drug dealing charges and ordered held on $50,000 bail. He and his attorney fought hard to get the evidence against him tossed, suggesting various problems with the way DPD conducted its controlled buy and search. In one of her last rulings from the bench, former Superior Court Judge Pat Douglas found in the state's favor and kept the evidence in. That teed up negotiations for a plea deal. Rivera took 6 years and pleaded to 1 count of attempted heroin distribution. The always feisty Whitney Power was his court-appointed attorney, but had changed her tune a bit by Tuesday.
"The facts of this case presented a difficult defense, and so I do think that the state's been fairly fair with Mr. Rivera in this case, considering who he is."
Who he is a 5-time convicted felon, which pushed his presumptive jail time higher than what the state felt was appropriate in this case. Assistant District Attorney Dan Doty says he consulted with DPD and with the Department of Corrections, who know Rivera quite well by now, before crafting this agreement.
"Everyone was in agreement that this is actually probably a more fair sentence for Mr. Rivera's conduct than the 13 to 20 years that he was looking at based on his felony history."
Rivera's record includes other drug possession and dealing convictions, as well as theft and mischief and other crimes Doty described as bad decision-making but not violent. When Judge Gregory Miller asked Rivera if he had anything to say, the 38-year-old uncorked for a full 8 minutes about his drug addiction and why he says behind bars is really not a good place for him to be.
"I can go back to jail right now and get any drug I want in a second, and I can use it any way I want. I can shoot it. I can smoke it. I can do whatever. It's all available, and it's like that in all prison. You don't get help there. You don't get better in jail."
Even though law enforcement describes Rivera as a remorseless career criminal, he blamed his dealing heroin to Dillingham residents and other past crimes on his addiction. He told the judge it would be smarter to send him to a residential treatment facility first, where he can kick his habit and build a positive support network before going back among the inmate population who he claims pressures prisoners to keep using.
"This next 6 years of my life is a waste of time. I'm not maturing. I'm not getting any better. I'm telling you, I'm going to be worse, if anything, when I get out in 4 years. I know nothing can change that. I have to pay for what I do, but I'm just telling you that. I'm just saying that jail doesn't help addicts.
When his 8-minute-long rant was complete, Judge Miller said he was somewhat sympathetic to Rivera's gripes about the system, but told him the buck eventually had to stop with himself.
You might not have the control over your life that you want and we want you to have, but it is ultimately your decision when you quit and move forward with your life. You got an awful lot of strikes against you. I get it. But you'll be back for longer sentences if you don't make that turn in the road.
Rivera has remained in custody since his arrest on January 9th. He was ordered to immediately begin the remainder of his 6-year sentence following the hearing Tuesday. In Dillingham, I'm Dave Benninger.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Boating accidents happen, even to experienced boaters and on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make those you care about promise to be rescue ready by always wearing a life jacket when in an open boat or on deck, attaching the engine cutoff device when underway, and carrying emergency communication and distress signaling devices on their person. Visit pledgetolive.org for more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
Dash and body camera video of Fairbanks police shooting of a suspect backs law enforcement accounts of what happened. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the video released at a press conference shows a high-speed chase and fatal shooting of 23-year-old Sean Buck on May 25th.
The video footage follows Fairbanks police and Alaska State Troopers chasing Sean Buck on the Richardson Highway. The video concludes as law enforcement closes in and Buck is seen holding a pistol to his head and ramming surrounding patrol vehicles with his truck.
He's got a gun! He's got a gun!
Police Chief Eric Jukes was one of 4 FPD officers who fired at Buck, so Deputy Chief Brad Johnson led the press conference. Johnson described how the incident began with an attempt to stop Buck on an outstanding felony arrest warrant. Johnson defended officers ultimately firing on Buck.
At the time the officers fired their weapons, they all believed that they or their fellow officers were about to be killed or gravely injured by Buck. Not only had Buck repeatedly used the truck as a weapon, but he had also used his handgun to fire at them during the pursuit. There were also civilians on the on-ramp whose lives Buck put in jeopardy by his actions.
Deputy Chief Johnson displayed video captured mid-chase showing evidence of Buck shooting from his truck.
A bullet hole in the front windshield that was fired from inside the vehicle. Prior to everything else that you just watched.
A state trooper investigation found officers were justified in shooting Buck. Deputy Chief Johnson spoke highly of how officers responded, but also expressed remorse.
We understand that on this day a person lost his life, and there are people in our community that cared about him.
That sentiment was underscored by City Mayor Jim Matherly.
Taking a life is the last resort for these officers, but they have a duty to protect themselves, to protect each other who are at the scene, and most importantly, the public, you and me, and all of us.
The officer-involved shooting was followed by a second fatal incident less than a month later. 21-year-old Matthew Colton Stover of Northway was shot by police after allegedly firing at officers attempting to talk to him. Police anticipate a similar release of video from that shooting after a state investigation is completed. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
The city of Kodiak has easy access to internet compared to many other rural locations in the state, but Kodiak Island's village communities are struggling. KMXT's Kayla DeRoche has more.
Port Lyons on the north end of Kodiak Island is home to a school, a library, and a few lodges.
It's also home to Judith Clayton, who owns a B&B and has a background in education. In the island communities, students often use online resources and classes to supplement their educations. Clayton says internet connectivity is an ongoing battle for parents. She says the school and the library are the only realistic internet access points.
I hate to even think of doing anything at home on the computer because it's so time-consuming. The speeds are just phenomenally slow.
And since the school is closed during the summer, that leaves only the library for internet access for part of the year. Clayton says access there is unreliable and pricey. She says over the years, these issues have taken a toll on parents.
They became very, very critical in 2011, 2012, into where we as a community were very, very frustrated and started looking at telecommunications.
Port Alliance put together a broadband survey earlier in March, and Clayton says that's when they connected with Digital Inclusion Corps through the Aleutic Museum in the city of Kodiak. The museum is one of five sites in the United States participating in the federally funded program, which is aimed at building digital knowledge and broadband infrastructure in rural areas. Development assistant Jeff Garcy joined the staff in February to tackle the project. He says he's been working with the island communities to assess their situations, touch base with residents, and brainstorm solutions.
We have a very unique situation here in Kodiak because of our lack of infrastructure, where other communities are facing a lack of just digital education. The infrastructure is there, the connectivity is there, and it's just a matter of learning. We have both people who aren't comfortable using the internet and a lack of connectivity, which is causing a digital divide.
He says the microwave system on the island only goes so far. It has the ability to broadcast only a certain amount of data.
Without upgrading the microwave system to different radios, they're limited on how much data can be pushed through those microwave towers. Right now, that's the big problem for the villages is, A, getting the amount of data, which would cost a lot of money to upgrade those, and B, having the infrastructure in the villages to actually broadcast that data out to the houses.
Some communities are still working on getting a microwave tower. Garcy says Larson Bay will install one in the fall and Carluck will follow. He says he and some local representatives have joined together under the name of Kodiak Rural Connect to think up possible solutions. Among its members are the Afognak Native Corporation, Kodiak Native Corporation, and Old Harbor Native Corporation. He says Kodiak Rural Connect will speak at the Kodiak Archipelago Rural Regional Leadership Forum in late September to share their ideas. I'm Kayla DeRoche.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman and Rasha McChesney in Juneau, Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Teresa Kotsarilis in Bethel, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak, and Dave Benninger in Dillingham. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
4 out of 5 Alaskans addicted to heroin started by using prescription opioids. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medications prevents anyone from taking them without permission, which could endanger them and lead to consequences with law enforcement. Find out more at opioids.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.